You're listening to the Daily Mishnah Podcast with Benedict.
So as we go through the 13th chapter, and we're going to finish the 13th chapter now today, we're getting into these grey areas, these ambiguous situations, particularly where there's a lack of consent or a lack of legal capacity, either because one of the participants is underage or one of the participants doesn't have full mental capacity. And the Mishnah is going to conclude with, go back to a Yavam or Yavama who's under the age of majority. And we've said, by the way, that sexual intercourse with someone under the age of majority does work to perform Yibum. But we need to bear in mind that other kind of acts that we might carry out in terms of marriage, so for example, get, divorce, can't work with people who don't have legal capacity. So we have the very unusual situation where a Yavam who is underage might be able to contract marriage via Yibum because his sexual intercourse is valid, but he can't get out of it by, for example, giving a get. He doesn't have legal capacity actually to do anything. So it's a really interesting anomalous. It's an anomalous legal situation. And for example, he couldn't give kiddushin. He couldn't get married in any other way. Not only can he not give a get, but he can't give kiddushin. So what are we going to do? And the Mishnah begins. We're in the 12th Mishnah of the 13th chapter. Yavam katan sheba al yavama katana. So a minor yavam had intercourse with a minor yavama. So this is someone who's, so she's a child bride of presumably his adult brother. His adult brother dies childless. She's now a widow, and so she needs either chalitza or yibum. And by the way, because he's underage, he can't contract. The chalitza isn't valid either. So the chalitza is not valid. So I'm not sure. So they're in it's a completely anomalous situation. Anyway, the Mishnah continues. Yavam katan sheba al yavama katana. A minor yavam had intercourse with a minor yavama. Yigdalu ze imze. They should be brought up together. And I think the Gemara comments, by the way, that when he reaches the age of majority, he can actually give her a get. So, and I checked with one of my teachers at Pardes as to, you know, are societies in society at the time of the Mishnah, are we actually consummating child marriage? And she and it's a historical question, but she thought actually not. And by the way, the same with marriage in Roman times, she made the point that it was possible to marry off children, and perhaps that might be for their own protection. So if we're dealing with an orphan, as we have done for most of the 13th chapter, we're dealing with an orphan, someone whose father is no longer alive. If we're dealing with someone whose husband is no longer alive, maybe it is important to put them, you know, in the time of the Mishnah, just for their own protection, it might be important to put them into some kind of familial framework just in order that they can't be taken advantage of in some other way. So the Mishnah rules, yigdalu ze imze. So they bring them up together, and at a certain point when he reaches the age of majority, he can then do something about it. Ba'al yavama gadola, tagdilena. If he had intercourse with an adult yavama, so this sounds like the widow is an adult, but the brother of the deceased man, the brother-in-law, is underage. Ba'al yavama gadola, he had intercourse with an adult yavama, tagdilena, she should bring him up, i.e. she brings him up, and then at a certain point, once he reaches the age of majority, at that point, he can take further action. Yavama she'amra b'toch 30 yom, lo niv'alti. A yavama who declared within 30 days, this must be within 30 days of Yibum, lo nivalti, he hasn't had intercourse with me. Now, remember that the Yibum is triggered, at least rabbinically, by Ma'amar, by the Yabam giving a promise to the Yevamah that he's going to give her Yibum. But the act of Yibum is only triggered by the consummation of the marriage. So there has to be, a question as to what happens if he gives her a Ma'amar and he takes her into his house, but this marriage is never consummated. So what happens next? And the Mishnah rules, kofino toshiach lotzla. So they force him to perform chalitza, by which I mean, I think the Mishnah means, of course, they force him to accept chalitza from her. Le'achar, and there's an assumption, the Mishnah is going to make an assumption that within 30 days, the marriage hasn't necessarily been consummated. Le'achar shloshim yom, after 30 days, mevakshim mimenu she'ach lotzla. After 30 days, they request that he perform chalitza. So the feeling of that, there's a feeling here that the court doesn't have the power or doesn't have the moral power to force him to accept chalitza after this point. And there's an assumption that if there's a problem with the Yibum, that she would have said so before the end of the 30 days. If this thing drags on after 30 days, maybe there's some question mark about the facts of the case or what happened, but at any rate, the court doesn't have the power to force him to accept the chalitza. Unless, there's always an unless. Uvizman shehu modeh. But if he agrees, if he agrees that the marriage hasn't been consummated, afilu lachar shnemasah chodesh, even after 12 months. So they could have been together for 12 months. But if the marriage hasn't been consummated, so in a sense, Yibum hasn't taken place. At that point, kofino toshiach lotzla. At that point, they do force him to perform chalitza. Now, what if the woman, now we're talking about an overage woman, of course, what if the woman refused to take part in the Yibum? And that will be that question of consent. So we've dealt, if you like, a little bit with question of consent with underages. And it seems to be the view of the Mishnah is, look, okay, we're going to wait until they reach the age of majority. What about someone who is at the age of majority? And this is the end of the 13th chapter, the concluding Mishnah. Anayami Yivama, someone who vowed to have no benefit from her Yavam. And you could take, in time of the Mishnah, it was probably more common to take a vow than it is now. And we've seen, for example, in the Mishnah of Shabbat and of Eruvin, someone will vow to take no benefit from, I don't know, someone in his family. So the widow vows, this is, by the way, vows during the life of her husband, not to have any benefit from her brethren. In the Mishnah makes clear in the life of her husband. Kofin oto shiacholotzla. During the husband's lifetime, they force him to perform chalitza. And the Maimonides makes clear, by the way, that she performs chalitza, she actually receives the ketubah on the death of her husband. So she gets, so she's a free woman. But there's always a but. Achar mitat bala. If she makes this vow after the death of her husband. In other words, she's making this vow because she doesn't want to take part in the Yibum process at all. And it's very interesting. Yibum, in theory, can take place with either of the deceased wives. So maybe no other wife wants to take part. Maybe there's no other wife. Although in theory the woman has a choice, it seems that kind of at this point, maybe her choice is a bit less than we might think. Because the Mishnah rules, mevakshim mimenu shechalotzla, we request that he perform chalitza. And Maimonides makes clear in his code that at this point she does not receive the money from her ketubah. Although the halacha seems to split a little bit between the Ashkenazi and the Sephardi commentators. The Ashkenazi commentators would say, yes, she does receive the money from her ketubah. But the Mishnah makes clear, imnit kavnalacha, if that was her intention, in other words, she intends not to take part in the process, afilu b'chayev ala, even during the lifetime of her husband, mevakshim mimeno sheyachalotzla, we ask of the husband that he perform chalitza, but we don't force him. And the Rambam makes clear in his commentary, I put the commentary on the source sheet, maybe we'll just finish here, because it raises really interesting questions about the extent to which the halakha really did give the woman the power of consent or lack of consent in this, in these cases. And first of all, he says, look, during her husband's lifetime, if the Yevamah takes a vow prohibiting her from deriving benefit from the Yavam, then she gets her chalitza and she can collect a marriage contract. Vetitol ketubata. In other words, she gets enough money to be financially independent. But if she takes a vow after her husband's death, then harezor moredet, she's considered to have rebelled. She's considered to have rebelled against the authority of her husband. And in that case, she does not get the money from the ketubah. So that seems to be a disastrous financial outcome for her. And it's exactly the same. And even if she took a vow on purpose to avoid the yibum in her husband's lifetime, he's not compelled. He's not compelled to perform chalitza, Eila im kain marda, unless she effectively rebels against him, and then vetetse below kusuba. So she does avoid yibum, but she suffers a disastrous financial penalty for doing so.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Daily Mishnah Podcast with Benedict.